All right, here we go. Final episode in the series. Guaranteed, because I don't have that much more to talk about. This might even be a shorter than normal episode, because if I finish this out, I'm not going to pad it out to the normal runtime. Oh, man. You know, I think this is a good endorsement. I should send Scott Adams a bill for endorsing his book. Any book that I talk about for 6 episodes is a book that you should probably read. He could put that on the back of his book. The Great One talked about this book for 6 episodes of his podcast. You should probably read it. Except, of course, that no one gives a fuck what I talk about. You can scream and shout with all your might. But they do care about screaming, shouting, crying, crying, sniffing, pissing, moaning, blah, 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 blah. You can sharp your opinions up your ass away the Trump and Fierce cock is something to keep it company. Either you are wrong or I am right. Don't forget, my friends and my enemies, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility, you are wrong and I am right. Damn, it's good to be me. Oh, God. Good thing I don't have an ego problem or anything like that. Hey, I don't have an ego problem. My ego is perfectly healthy. So healthy, it's huge. And this is Stating the Obvious podcast. It is the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile, my intellect, homes, and I destroy status, all around the world. Does not matter what kind of status you are, you can be a level zero. Here we go. All right. Let's get back into this. We left off talking about egos. I'm going to finish reading this section to you. If you're like most people, you will learn to keep that. Whew. Still reading challenged, apparently. My ego is huge, like my dick, but apparently I'm still reading challenged. Alright, then I'm still getting the soundboard settings right. This has been a good exercise, though, because I've been able to fuck with the soundboard. I hope all this is coming out. I haven't actually listened to anything I've recorded. This is episode 6. I haven't listened to any of these to even spot check them. I see something's coming through because I see the waveform on the computer. If I find out that all of this sucks, I'm maybe really upset. But hey, you know what? Life goes on. If you are like most people, you will learn your track record of predicting the future is worse than you imagine. That sort of humility is essential for breaking you out. Whew! That sort of humility is essential for breaking out of your mental prison. Keep a few examples of your wrongness fresh in your memory so you can generate the right level of humility about your omniscience in future situations. And again, he's right about that. I think about myself. Back when I predicted that the war in Afghanistan, in fact, there's a podcast episode where I actually say, yeah, the war in Afghanistan, we've practically won it. It's practically over. Here we are 15 years later, still running around Afghanistan. The United States military getting their ass kicked by, you know, people with AK-47s who have sex with camels. So yeah, I was vastly, vastly wrong. We talked about it in this series. I was wrong many, many moons ago when I predicted the exact same thing that Scott Adams is predicting in this book right here. And he's also wrong that the public school system is going to be replaced by computers and the internet. Because what I didn't factor in and what Scott Adams is not factoring in is, number one, the teachers' unions and the laziness of the people in the teachers' unions. And then, of course, number two, the fact that, and this is worse than it was back when I predicted it, the fact that there's a lot of people out there who have children and they don't want to raise their children. People don't want their kids to stay home. Neither of those problems, the fact that breeders, not parents, but breeders don't want to raise their children, and the teachers' unions, neither of those is going to be overcome anywhere in the near future. Unless, of course, we start exterminating people with IQs under 95, which I fully endorse, but it's not realistically going to happen. Don't think of your past mistakes as flaws when you can easily reframe them as learning experiences, because they are. Once you can embrace the educational value that comes with being wrong, you will find it easier to think, but I might be wrong this time in any given situation. There will be occasions when you will want to dial down your ego to avoid looking like a jerk. I mean, I suppose for some people, I've never thought of a situation where I would want to dial down my ego, but okay, I suppose some people might encounter that. For example, sometimes you might need to pretend in front of others that you have some doubts about your opinion, even if you don't. The alternative would be to look like an arrogant know-it-all. Well, but what if you are an arrogant know-it-all? So I don't have these problems. Don't hesitate to fake humility. Hey, maybe I should try this sometime. Don't hesitate to fake humility when the situation calls for it, but don't overdo it. On the whole, people prefer confident people. And again, he's right about that. All right. Page 54, for those of you following along in the book. Second full paragraph. But okay, this is great. Oh, this is a good point. As a rule, we can't always tell the difference. And this is another thing where Scott's being brilliant. This is worth really meditating on. As a rule, we can't always tell the difference between the people who are far, far smarter than us and the people who are dumber. Now you're thinking, great one, how can you not tell the difference between people smarter than you and people stupider than you? Well, wait, he's about to explain this. It makes a lot of sense. Both groups make choices we can't understand. So think about, for example, let's talk about someone who is perhaps smarter than you and I, or perhaps stupider than you and I. Bill Gates. Bill Gates thinks it's a great idea to force everyone to get a vaccine and give them a tattoo. Now, we look at that, you and I, and we think, that motherfucker is, I don't understand that, that guy's a fucking idiot. So that's the thing. Is he so much smarter than we are that we just can't understand the wisdom of forcing people to get vaccinations and tattoos? Or is he so much stupider than we are that we can't understand his logic in wanting to force everybody to get vaccinations and tattoos? See, it could be either one. It really could. I mean, as someone who believes that the Wuhan virus is a pandemic, even though it's only killed 200,000 people in the United States, okay, so is that person so much smarter than we are that we can't understand why this person thinks 200,000 old, sick people who died is a big deal? Or is this person so much dumber than we are that we can't understand why this person thinks that 200,000 old sick people who died, who were going to die anyway because everybody dies, is a big deal? But all sarcasm aside, I mean, this is a good point that he makes. We can't always tell the difference between people who are far smarter than us and people who are dumber. Both groups make choices we can't understand. That's an important thing to keep in mind. If your opinion is that another person's idea is terrible, you can only be sure that at least one of you is stupid. You can't really know which one of you it is, except in rare cases in which things can be objectively measured. He's got a point. It's a pretty interesting point, too. Okay, page 60. This is chapter 5, Thinking Like a Historian. One of the strongest walls in our mental prison is a thing called history. History isn't even real. I mean that in two ways. And this is another thing you're going to hear him saying a lot of things that I've been saying for years. Mr. Adams, you're lucky I don't sue you for plagiarism. So if somebody who is absolutely no one attempts to sue Scott Adams for plagiarizing his podcast, is the person suing Scott Adams so amazingly smart that his actions look stupid? Or is he so amazingly stupid that his actions look stupid? See, you wouldn't really be able to tell. You'd be like, damn, man, that the great one, that I have no understanding why he thinks that's a good idea. He must be so much smarter than I am. He's going to sue Scott Adams for plagiarism. He has no real evidence that Scott Adams plagiarized him, but he's going to do it anyway. Wow, he must be a genius. And you know, that actually is, once again, that's kind of the way we look at people like who believe in global warming. You know, like Paul Ehrlich. Okay, once again, Paul Ehrlich, who, because everybody listening to this podcast already knows, I'm about to say, he's the guy who wrote the books about how in the United States, we were all going to run out of food. There would be food riots. We would starve because the population would grow faster than the ability to feed the population. And we were all going to be rioting for food by 1980 and by 1990 and by 2000 and by 2010 and by 2020. And there are people who look at Paul Ehrlich and his multitude of wrong predictions and they think, wow, this guy, he's making these predictions that are absolutely stupid. And so he must be really smart. I mean, I think that's a big part. I think Scott Adams has hit on something here. And not my girlfriend or your girlfriend. He's hit on something intellectual here. I think the dumb people, and I'm sort of now building on what he just said and extrapolating. I think when dumb people see things that are sufficiently dumb, that, you know, so they see the dumbness, like Paul Ehrlich predicting that people are going to die every 10 years, we're all going to starve to death. We've all starved to death and died 5 times already. But the common, the normies, the believers, the people who think that CNN and Fox News are real, right, they see that level of stupidity and they can't accept that they live in a world where the people who control things are that stupid. And so the normies have to reframe the stunning stupidity as intelligence. Now, once again, Bill Gates, he wants to vaccinate every mandatory vaccinations and tattoos to leave your house and all this other stuff. That's insanely stupid. But the normies, they look, well, but Bill Gates is rich. He must be smart. And they can't accept that Bill Gates is an idiot because they've been told so many times that Bill Gates is a genius. So they've got to assume that he's a genius. So when Bill Gates says something stupid, everybody's got to act like it's really smart. The first way history is not real is that whoever is in charge gets to write history any way they like. And the way they like it is whatever keeps them in power and looking awesome. That means you should expect the history in one country to be substantially different from the history in another, even when discussing the same events. Which history is the accurate one? Answer, neither. Both are filtered through politics and distorted to the point of being misleading, if not outright untrue, except for the basic facts, such as names and dates. And I also put forth, and this is one of my problems with religions, I say the same thing about the Bible, right? We have people like Adam Piggott who thinks the Bible was written by God. Well, let's say the original Bible was actually written by God. Problem is, the Bible has been translated into English by humans. And when those humans were translating the Bible, if you think they didn't slide in some of their own opinions here and there, I have to assume you're a nutcase. You're just not thinking this through, right? You want to believe in God so much that you're willing to just ignore something that should be blatantly obvious, that when humans translate something, they might slip something in there for their own political means and gains and purposes. When I was a kid, I learned in history classes that bold European explorers discovered and settled America. They were well-intentioned folk who tried and largely failed to befriend the Native American population. Unfortunately, said my textbooks, the Native Americans were too primitive to understand important concepts such as private property, and one thing led to another until the European settlers graciously granted Native Americans their own reservations. For free! Somewhere along the line, the Native Americans taught the pioneers how to grow corn. That's the condensed, racist version of history I learned. See, that's racist. Scott Adams, later in the book, as you will remember, points out that when people call you racist, that means they don't have any real arguments. But I assumed, excuse me, but I Okay, voice is dying. But I assume that had Native Americans written our history books, the accounts might look quite different. Those books might say Columbus was a psychopathic monster and that European invaders pursued genocide to steal land from the locals or something along those lines. And that's actually what's being written in the books now because the books are being written by leftists. And yes, he's completely right that everyone writes history to their own liking. As a young person, I took it for granted that my country had the accurate version of history and everyone else was lying or misinformed. It never occurred to me that every government invents its own version of history to brainwash their population. Well, yes, they do. We are raised to assume we are the lucky ones who learn accurate history while evil leaders elsewhere are duping their citizens. I hope you can see how unlikely it is that any country is presenting history to its children in an objective way. And of course, another classic bit of history writing is the way that we currently have a history that is written in which conservative Republicans fought a civil war to free the slaves. I'm sure history books get most of the big stuff right. For example, slavery really existed and World Wars I and II really happened. But context matters, and every story can be told multiple ways. Ever since the presidential election of 2016, we have been bombarded with fake news from every political direction. Both sides generate fake news and lots of it. Which versions will historians choose to put in textbooks? They have multiple realities from which to choose. My bet is that historians will choose versions of history that are best suited for indoctrinating kids to be obedient and productive citizens. Truth will be a secondary consideration, as always, when it comes to socializing children into productive adults. That's the truth right there. The history that is chosen is the history that is best suited for indoctrinating children into being obedient and productive. Remember, the government wants you to be just smart enough to have a job so you can pay taxes and make money so that you can go to Walmart or Amazon.com and buy things. Any intelligence beyond that is not only unnecessary from the perspective of the state, but is discouraged from the perspective of the state. No one wants you to figure out that the climate has always changed. Right? No one wants you to figure out that the Wuhan hoax is a hoax. No one wants you to figure out that the reason college tuition is so expensive is because the banks keep dumping money into it. Right? No one wants you to figure out the banks. No one wants you to figure out that the corporations write the legislation. No one wants you to figure out that we do actually live in what Jack Spirico called a neo-fascist society. So fascism, real fascism, is when the government and the corporations, the government doesn't own the businesses, that would be communism, but the government and the businesses, or the businesses work with the government to implement the desires of the government, right? So the government and the businesses are working hand in hand towards the desired goals of the government. Jack Spirko accurately, accurately labeled what the society we live in now, the government we have now, as neo-fascist. The government and the businesses are in cahoots, but it's not the goals of the government that we're going, it's the goals of the businesses. It's again, the regulations, right? The businesses write the regulations, the government passes them. Right now, we have a system where the government exists to serve the corporations. That's why whenever one of these major corporations is about to fail, what happens? The government shows up and bails it out. I mean, you can't get much more government serving the corporations than when the corporations fuck up. And in a true market economy, would run out of money and literally self-destruct, literally Hitler self-destruct. When the government shows up and bails the corporation out with taxpayer money, I mean, you can't get a much clearer example that the government exists to serve the corporations than that right there. Okay, that was history. Did my little Civil War bit. All right, slippery slope. We talked about this a little bit, but I want to read to you what he has to say about slippery slope. Because this is one of those things where he's kind of right and he's kind of wrong. The slippery slope argument bothers me more than most forms of loser think. It is generally presented as an argument that things will continue going in the same direction until they go too far and some form of harm is done. For example, gun rights folks will argue that any form of gun control is a slippery slope to full confiscation. Some support that argument with appeals to history repeats based on the experiences of countries that are quite different from the United States. My objection to the slippery slope argument is that everything is a slippery slope until it isn't. In physics, a body in motion will stay in motion until it meets an equal and opposing force. Our experience of life is a lot like that. He also somewhere in the books talks about how you can't make arguments by analogy, and now he's making an argument by analogy. But it's okay. I mean, it's, you know, I do the same shit. literally everything would be, literally Hitler, everything would be a slippery slope if not for counterforces. So look for counterforces to predict how far a thing will slide. If there are no offsetting forces, then yes, things will keep going in one direction forever, but that's rare. Not really. Usually a counterforce pops up as a reaction or is already in place. Okay, so see, here's my examples where there is no counterforce. Once again, there is no counterforce to the teachers' unions and the lazy parents, lazy breeders, rather. There's also currently no counterforce to homosexuals going out on the streets and pulling, going naked and putting their dicks in the faces of small children and telling these small children there's no such thing as men and women, and if they want to dress up as girls, they can do that, and all this other weird shit that's going on, taking us towards the legalization and social acceptance and normalization, to use a word Scott Adams doesn't like using, the normalization of pedophilia. Right? There is no opposition to this. You go to the fucking public library and you see men wearing women's clothes and makeup, reading stories to little children. Okay, there's no opposition to the push to pedophilia. And we've actually hit the point, too, where now pedophiles are being praised. They're being, well, there's nothing wrong with them. It's natural. It's just another sexual orientation. They have their own flag. I mean, there's no resistance. In the case of gun control in the United States, the counterforce is gun owners themselves and their commitment to the Second Amendment. They generally favor common sense rules about gun safety, but if you start knocking on doors to take guns away, that is unlikely to end well. The slippery slope simply doesn't apply. But here's the question. Here's a question. Talking about using this specific example with gun ownership. I mean, do we really want to slide so far down the slope that we do? Because so Scott says that if you start knocking on doors to take away the guns, it's not going to end well. I agree. Do we really want to get to that point, though? What if we stopped before we get to the part where the knocking on the door to take the guns away doesn't go well? The slippery slope doesn't always mean we're going to end up, say in this case, at all the guns being confiscated, but maybe we're going to end up at the point where the police, if they don't get defunded, which I hope they do, because then there's no one to protect the blacks and the Jews from being killed by the racist white people. But let's say that we get to the point where the police are knocking on the doors, confiscating the guns, and then there's a lot of shooting. Do we really want to get to that point for things to stop? Right, the slippery slope simply doesn't apply. Gun owners might end up with more restrictive rules of ownership than they prefer, but so long as most of the public prefers the new rules, you can't blame the slippery slope. That's just voters getting what they want. Yes, because voters getting what they want, that's a good thing. Voters have been getting what they want for a long time, and look where that's gotten us. There's also no objective way to know when a slippery slope is more progress than problem. Depends which side you're on. Your slippery slope might be my progress. I like progress, and I don't want you to stop my progress by labeling it a slippery slope. See, progress, there's another great word. You know, Scott doesn't like the words normalize and problematic, and for good reasons. Okay, those are nebulous words if you don't define them. Here's progress. That's right up there with change. right? We've done this a million fucking times on this podcast. Okay. If you've got some Jews, because we got to do the Jews, because all the people, oh my God, the great one's anti-Semitic. Hey guys, maybe you're thinking I'm stupid. Maybe I'm just so much smarter than you. Because see, you can't recognize the difference between someone smarter than you and someone stupider than you. So you're not anti-Semitic. You love Jews and you suck Bill Gates's cock and all this other stuff. And I don't. So am I smarter than you or stupider than you? You can't really be sure. Anyhow, let's say you got 6 million Jews. And those Jews, they have houses and property and clothes and jobs and stuff. Okay, so if you take the Jews and you put them in a camp and you kill them all and you throw their bodies in a mass grave, well, that's change. Because that's different than what was before, right? We've been over this example 100 fucking times. But, oh, change is good. Change is good. Whoa. I'm touching myself and thinking about Bill Gates. Change. Woo. Change is good. All right. So progress is much the same. What the fuck is progress? Whose version of progress? Hitler's version of progress? Gandhi's version of progress? Joseph Biden's incoherent version of progress? Orange Man's version of progress? Bill Gates' version of progress? I mean, whose progress do we got here? Progress, that's a word you can't fucking define. And once again, it's a word, it's a nebulous word. It's a word that has a dictionary meaning. But when you start applying, oh, we need progress. What the fuck does that mean? That's like saying, we need change. We need progress. Well, you know, you do know that virtually anything is progress. It's a progression. It's a progression of events. Progress. Legalizing pedophilia. That would be progress. It's a progression of events. Progress. It means nothing. It's a word that means not a fucking thing. That's why people like to use it. I don't know if in the history of this podcast I've ever fucking used the word progress in this sort of sense, as in, I want progress. I like progress. That's what he writes. I like progress. I don't want you to stop my progress by labeling it a slippery slope. I don't know if I've ever used the word progress in that context because it doesn't mean anything. For Scott to say, I like progress, it's like saying, I like change. Oh, so you support gassing Jews because gassing Jews is change. Right? I like progress. Okay, legalizing pedophilia, that's progress. So you support pedophilia, right? It doesn't mean anything. The slippery slope isn't a concept worthy of using for persuasion or for any other purpose. It isn't predictive because there is generally a counterforce ahead. And if the counterforce is not evident or seems too weak, there's a good chance a stronger counterforce will materialize specifically to stop the slippery slope. So I don't think he's entirely wrong, right? Again, when he says that there's a counterforce, and if there's not a counterforce, it will probably materialize. I think he's right about all that. If anything, the part where the part of this that bugs me is that right now I look around where we are right now and I don't see the counterforces. Because the thing that's supposed to be the counterforce, the thing that claims to be the element in our society that claims to be the counterforce to the progress towards replacing white people and having sex with children, right? The element that claims to be the counterforce to that is the political right. And the political right is a bunch of fucking cucks who are literally Hitler cucking. They are literally Hitler bringing in immigrants. They are literally Hitler sending their children to schools and colleges where the children are being given the information that there's no such thing in boys and girls. They are literally allowing their male children to pretend they are girls. They are they are literally Hitler adopting children from different races. They are literally Hitler cucks. So I don't see any fucking opposition of significance. But I'd love to be wrong. All right. Whoa, man, we're almost done. Page 74. Privacy is overrated. Once again, we're going to skip. We're not reading the whole thing. He gives a personal example about personal show. And in that case, I see his point and I see where he's coming from and he makes a lot of sense. But still, this is, and once again, I fully admit this is somewhat of an emotional reaction. When you come at me and you tell me that privacy is overrated, you know, my first response is to punch you in the face. And yes, I acknowledge that's an emotional response. But once again, when our privacy, thanks to being tracked and monitored and the internet and the cameras and the impending Wuhan vaccination and the tattoos that are going to go with it, when our privacy is disappearing more and more and more every day, and, well, that's the slippery slope. Oh, my God, here we go. Right. But don't tell me that privacy is overrated. Anyhow, let's read what he actually says and argue with that instead of just swatting at non-existent arguments. Humans probably don't have a biological need for much privacy. Humans don't have a biological need for a lot of things. I mean, humans can biologically function in a concentration camp. I mean, humans don't have a biological need for healthcare or money. We evolved without all those things. We didn't evolve with hospitals and health insurance and automobiles and electricity. Okay, there's a lot of things we don't have a biological need for. Not an argument. Humans probably don't have a biological need for much privacy. We are tribal creatures, meaning we evolved in environments in which the tribe knew everything about you, whether you liked it or not. We also evolved in environments where the people who were old, sick, weak, had no immune systems, had diabetes, were overweight, died off. Especially if, you know, a virus came through that infected people who were old, weak, had no immune systems, diabetes, were fat, so forth and so on. Yet I notice we're sparing no fucking expense to fight that. Right, Scott Adams? I'm sorry, you couldn't hear me? Oh, that's because your head is down between Bill Gates' thighs because you've got his dick in your mouth. Privacy seems to be more of a modern invention. Much like electricity and vaccinations, which I don't see you prepared to give up. Most of us appreciate having privacy in a variety of situations, but it's not likely that our preference for privacy is compatible with our nature. Consider that humans also enjoy drugs, cigarettes, and alcohol. Just because we prefer something doesn't make it good for us. He's not wrong about that. Privacy has real-world benefits, and I don't recommend you give it up without a fight. But, remember the word but means that everything that was said previously is a lie. But if your desire for some specific forms of privacy is fear-based, you might be creating a mental prison for yourself that you don't want. If your desire for privacy is fear-based. See, once again, the left... And yeah, I'm accusing Scott Adams of being a leftist here. The left always likes to frame everything as fear. Once again, you're homophobic. You're afraid of homosexuals. You're transphobic. You're afraid of trannies. Everything to them is fear. Oh, you're so afraid. You're not progressive like we are, right? You're not willing to allow invaders to come into your country, destroy your culture, rape your children, destroy your statues, burn down your buildings. You're not willing to do those things like we are because we are progressive and you're afraid. I think most people would agree that the pivotal step in the advancement of gay rights involved brave activists coming out about their sexual orientation and making it safe in time for others to do so. Yes, because I remember back in the day when the evil, racist, homophobic, transphobic, sexist white men, you know, would go out and lynch homosexuals all day long. We'd go out homosexual hunting. It just wasn't safe to be a homosexual. Yeah, I remember the days when you'd go out with your shotgun and your rifle and just shoot homosexuals in the street. It was so unsafe. But fortunately, these brave activists, they gave up their privacy to walk around in the streets totally naked in front of small children, waving rainbow flags and calling those of us who would like them to put some clothes on if they're going to walk around in public homophobic. I think I'm going to vomit. You could say that the LGBTQ KKK plus, the plus stands for pedophile community, traded privacy for equality. No, they didn't trade it for equality. They traded it for victory. Right? As T.J. Martinell pointed out on one of his podcasts, gay pride parades are victory parades. They didn't give up all of their privacy. Oh, the fuck they didn't. Everything about them is shoved down my throat constantly. Except for their dick. I've managed to, so far, keep their dicks out of my throat, but they would love to force their dicks upon me. They didn't give up all their privacy, only the part that kept them in a social prison. So see, not being able to walk in the street naked while wearing a rainbow wig and wearing a rainbow flag in front of small children and not being able to tell small children there's no such thing as boys and girls and not being able to tell little boys that they can be girls if they want to. See, that was a social prison. These poor homosexuals, you know, they had to behave like normal people. That was a social prison. And see, right now they're in the social prison of if they want to have sex with small children, they can't do that openly in the street the way they can have sex with each other openly in the street. They're in a social prison, these poor oppressed homosexuals. Thankfully, however, progressives like Scott Adams are going to work to make sure that the LGBTQ KKK plus, the plus stands for pedophile community, is able to escape that social prison, and soon they will be able to come into public schools and have sex with children, and there'll be nothing you can do about it.
A great one, that's just a slippery slope.
No, it's not a slippery slope, because the only people who might possibly oppose this are the Republic cucks, and they're a bunch of fucking cuckservatives who keep sending their children to public schools, and then their children come home and say, Daddy, I decided I'm a girl. That's the clearest historical example of privacy being more of a problem than a solution. Once the LGBTQ KKK plus, the plus stands for pedophile community, embraced the truth that privacy was their prison, not their protection, they had a path out. It wasn't easy. Oh, it wasn't easy. Walking around in the street naked with a rainbow flag, it's not easy, guys. Oh, it's not easy. And it might never be easy, but it's a winning path. Okay. Skipping ahead, we're still talking about privacy. We're on page 77, very last paragraph. I'm not anti-privacy. Remember, guys, if you have to say you are, it's because you're not. If you have to say you're not, it's because you are. I'm not anti-privacy. I take it as a given that there are some situations in which society is better off with a degree of privacy. My point here is that we have a reflexive desire for privacy that is not too... What? Oh. I have to articulate the sentence correctly, and it will work much better. My point here is that we have a reflexive desire for privacy that is not too far in type from our reflexive desire to eat junk food. The fact that we want privacy is not related to how good it is for us. My examples with LGBTQKKK+, the plus stands for pedophile, and shy bladder coming out make this case. Now consider what it would mean to health. And now here again, this is where... Anyway, let me read this and then I'll evaluate. Getting ahead of myself. Now consider what it would mean to healthcare outcomes if our lifestyle choices, our health records, our DNA, and even our current health indicators were routinely collected and stored. In this imaginary scenario, let's say the information was private from your neighbors but available in raw data form without your identification to scientists. Armed with that kind of useful health data, I would expect healthcare costs to drop and outcomes to improve. Once again, we see Scott lives in this fantasy world where he thinks that healthcare is expensive because there's not enough technology, because you have too much privacy. So now, imagine right now with the Wuhan flu. Can you imagine if your healthcare data, your body temperature, your pulse rate, all this other stuff was constantly monitored and sent to the government? Because that's where it would go. It would go either to the government or the corporations. The corporations would give it to the government. The government would give it to the corporations. Once again, we're back to the Bill Gates masturbatory fantasy of everybody getting a vaccine and a tattoo. You know, and this illusionary promise, well, but your data. Okay, how is your DNA going to be private? Once again, the idea that this data is going to be collected from you by the government or the corporations and not traced back. I mean, Google traces everywhere you go on your cell phone already. Now we're going to throw this in. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to some type of medical. And again, the scientists have access to the data. Wait, are these the same scientists who believe in global warming and Wuhan hoax? Are these the same scientists with a political agenda? I mean, my God, can you imagine people with a political, social, economic, philosophical agenda? People who want to exterminate white people, who want to replace white people with non-white people because they think white people are evil, because all, not evil, racist, because all white people are racist, even though there's no such thing as races, right? There are no races. There's only one race, the human race. There's no such thing as race. But white people are racist, and only white people are racist because there's no difference between the different races because races don't exist. There's no differences between people, but only white people are racist. Can you imagine if people who believe that shit right there, and that's the majority of scientists, got a hold of the intimate details of your entire medical history and your physical health? I mean, I'm sure nothing could go wrong there. Well, great one. That's a slippery slope argument. All right, anyway, that wraps it up. Again, the book is Loser Think, How Untrained Brains Are Ruining America by Scott Adams. It's a very good book. See, you can read this, you can get agitated. You agree with the guy, and then you get agitated. Then you agree with the guy, then you get agitated. And you agree with the guy, then you get agitated. It'll fill any needs you have for some drama in your life. Let me tell you what, man. It's almost like having a girlfriend. Except there's no sex involved. I mean, unless you're into Bill Gates, and then he mentions Bill Gates enough time that you'll probably get a hard on and you can whack off while thinking about Bill Gates giving you a vaccine and a tattoo. There's probably some people out there that really be into that. All right, anything else that I got to throw out? We're having another round of wildfires here in Colorado. We had a couple of days earlier in the week where the smoke seemed to have gone away. I was hiking on, what day was it? Wednesday, I think it was Wednesday. It was Wednesday. And there was hardly any smoke out there. It was really nice. And then yesterday was freaking smoky again. Apparently, there's a new wildfire. Today is a little bit smoky, but not terrible. So anyhow, and yeah, that's the exciting news from Fort Collins. I'm going to go hiking somewhere tomorrow is on my agenda plan. Don't know where that's going to be, so I may or may not do a podcast while hiking. I don't know. It's a slippery slope. I mean, if you're going uphill and there's a lot of loose gravel, it's a really slippery slope. Ha! See what I did there? God, I'm a fucking genius. Anyhow, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this 6-part series about this book. Hope it made some kind of fucking sense occasionally. And I'll catch you bitches next time around.